Deep down here by the dark water lived old Gollum. I don't know where he came from, nor who or what he was. He was Gollum, as dark as darkness, except for two big, round, pale eyes. He had a boat, and he rowed about quite quietly on the lake, for lake it was, wide and deep and deadly cold. He paddled it with large feet dangling over the side, but never a ripple did he make, not he. He was looking out of his pale, lamp-like eyes for blind fish, which he grabbed with his long fingers as quick as thinking. He liked meat, too. Goblin, he thought, good, when he could get it. But he took care they never found him out. He just throttled them from behind if ever they came down alone anywhere near the edge of the water while he was prowling about. They very seldom did, for they had a feeling that something unpleasant was lurking down there, down at the very roots of the mountain. They'd come on the lake when they were tunneling down long ago, and they found they could go no further, so there their road ended in that direction. There was no reason to go that way, unless the great goblin sent them. Sometimes he took a fancy for fish from the lake, and sometimes neither goblin nor fish came back. Actually, Gollum lived on a slimy island of rock in the middle of the lake. He was watching Bilbo now from the distance with his pale eyes like telescopes. Bilbo could not see him, but he was wondering a lot about Bilbo, for he could see that he was no goblin at all. Gollum got into his boat and shot off from the island while Bilbo was sitting on the brink, altogether flummoxed and at the end of his way in his wits. Suddenly up came Gollum and whispered and hissed, "Blesses and splashes, my precious. I guess it's a choice feast. At least a tasty morsel it'll make us all." And when he said "Gollum," he made a horrible swallowing noise in his throat. That is how he got his name, though he always called himself "my precious." The hobbit jumped nearly out of his skin when the hiss came in his ears, and he suddenly saw the pale eyes sticking out at him. "Who are you?" he said, thrusting his dagger in front of him. "What is he, my precious?" whispered Gollum, who always spoke to himself, through never having anyone else to speak to. That is what he had come to find out, but he was not really very hungry at the moment, only curious. Otherwise, he would have grabbed first and whispered afterwards. "I'm Mr. Bilbo Baggins. I've lost the dwarves, and I've lost the wizard, and I don't know where I am. I don't want to know if only I can get away."
"What's he got in his hands is?"
said Gollum, looking at the sword, which he did not quite like. "A sword, a blade which came out of Gondolin." said Gollum, and became quite polite.
"Perhaps he sits here and chats with it a bit, see, my precious. It likes riddles, perhaps, does it? Does it?"
He was anxious to appear friendly, at any rate for the moment, until he found out more about the sword and the hobbit, whether he was quite alone, really, whether he was good to eat, and whether Gollum was really hungry. Riddles were all he could think of. Asking them, sometimes guessing them, had been the only game he'd ever played with other funny creatures sitting in their holes in the long, long ago before the goblins came, and he was cut off from his friends far under the mountains. "Very well," said Bilbo, who was anxious to agree, until he found out more about the creature, whether he was quite alone, whether he was fierce or hungry, and whether he was a friend of the goblins. "You ask first," he said, because he had not had time to think of a riddle. So Gollum hissed,
"What has roots as nobody sees? He's taller than trees. Up, up it goes, and yet never grows."
"Easy," said Bilbo. "Mountain, I suppose."
"Does it guess easy? It must have a competition with us, my precious. If precious asks and it doesn't answer, beats it, my precious. If it asks us and we doesn't answer, then we does what he wants, eh? We shows it the way out, yes?"
"All right," said Bilbo, not daring to disagree and nearly bursting his brain to think of riddles that could save him from being eaten. "There are 30 white horses on a red hill. First they champ, then they stamp, then they stand still." That was all he could think of to ask. The idea of eating was rather on his mind. It was rather an old one, too, and Gollum knew the answer as well as you do.
"Chestnuts, chestnuts," he hissed. "Teeth, teeth, my precious, but we is only six.
Then he asked his second.
Voiceless it cries, wingless flutters, toothless bites, mouthless mutters.
Half a moment, cried Bilbo, who was still thinking uncomfortably about eating. Fortunately, he had once heard something rather like this before, and getting his wits back, he thought of the answer. Wind, of course, he said. And he was so pleased that he made one up on the spot. This will puzzle the nasty little underground creature, he thought. An eye in a blue face saw an eye in a green face. That eye is like to this eye, said the first eye, but in a low place, not in a high place. Said Gollum. He had been underground a long, long time, and was forgetting this sort of thing. But just as Bilbo was getting impatient, Gollum brought up memories of ages and ages and ages before, when he had lived with his grandmother in a hole in a bank by a river.
My precious, he said. Son of the daisies, it means it does.
But these ordinary above-ground, everyday sort of riddles were tiring for him. Also, they reminded him of days when he had been less lonely and sneaky and nasty, and that put him out of temper. What is more, they made him hungry. So this time he tried something a bit more difficult and more unpleasant.
It cannot be seen, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, cannot be smelt. It lies behind stars and under hills and empty holes it fills. It comes first and follows after, ends life, kills laughter.
Unfortunately for Gollum, Bilbo had heard that sort of thing before, and the answer was all round him anyway.
Dark, he said,
without even scratching his head or putting on his thinking cap.
A box without hinges, key or lid, yet golden treasure inside his head, he asked to gain time,
until he could think of a really hard one. This he thought a dreadfully easy chestnut, though he had not asked it in the usual words, but it proved a nasty poser for Gollum. He hissed to himself, and still he did not answer. He whispered and spluttered. After some while, Bilbo became impatient.
Well, what is it, he said.
The answer's not a kettle boiling over, as you seem to think from the noise you're making.
Give us a chance. Let it give us a chance, my precious.
Well, said Bilbo, after giving him a long chance, what is it? But suddenly Gollum remembered thieving from nests long ago, and sitting under the river, teaching his grandmother
to suck. Eggs it is.
Then he asked, alive without breath, as cold as death, never thirsty, ever drinking, all in mail, never clinking. He also, in his turn, thought this was a dreadfully easy one, because he was always thinking of the answer. But he could not remember anything better at the moment. He was so flustered by the egg question. All the same, it was a poser for poor Bilbo, who never had anything to do with the water if he could help it. I imagine you know the answer, of course, or can guess it as easy as winking, since you are sitting comfortably at home and have not the danger of being eaten to disturb your thinking. Bilbo sat and cleared his throat once or twice, but no answer came. After a while, Gollum began to hiss with pleasure to himself.
Is it nice, my precious? Is it juicy? Is it scrumptiously crunchable?
He began to peer at Bilbo out of the darkness. Half a moment, said the hobbit, shivering. I gave you a good long chance just now.
It must make haste, said Gollum,
beginning to climb out of his boat onto the shore to get at Bilbo. But when he put out his long, webby foot in the water, a fish jumped out in a fright and fell on Bilbo's toes.
Look, he said. It's cold, it's clammy.
And so he guessed.
Fish, he cried. It's a fish.
Gollum was dreadfully disappointed. But Bilbo asked another riddle as quick as ever he could, so that Gollum had to get back into his boat and think. No legs lay on one leg. Two legs sat near on three legs. Four legs got some. It was not really the right time for this riddle, but Bilbo was in a hurry. Gollum might have had some trouble guessing it if he'd asked it another time. As it was, talking of fish, no legs was not so very difficult. And after that, the rest was easy. Fish on a little table, man at table sitting on a stool, the cat has the bones. That, of course, is the answer, and Gollum soon gave it.
Then he thought the time had come to ask something hard and horrible. This is what he said. This thing all things devours. Birds, beasts, trees, flowers. Gnaws iron, bites steel, grinds hard stones to meal. Slays king, ruins town, and beats high mountain down. Poor Bilbo. He sat in the dark thinking of all the horrible names, of all the giants and ogres he had ever heard told of in tales, but not one of them had done all these things. He had a feeling that the answer was quite different, and that he ought to know it, but he could not think of it. He began to get frightened, and that's bad for thinking. Gollum began to get out of his boat. He flapped into the water and paddled to the bank. Bilbo could see his eyes coming towards him. His tongue seemed to stick in his mouth. He wanted to shout out, "Give me more time. Give me time." But all that came out with a sudden squeal was, "Time! Time!" Bilbo was saved by pure luck. And that, of course, was the answer. Gollum was disappointed once more. And now he was getting angry and also tired of the game. It had made him very hungry indeed. This time he did not go back to the boat. He sat down in the dark by Bilbo. That made the hobbit most dreadfully uncomfortable and scattered his wits. "It's got to ask us a question, my precious. Yes, yes, yes. Just one more question to guess. Yes, yes," said Gollum. But Bilbo simply could not think of any question with that nasty, wet, cold thing sitting next to him and pawing him and poking him. He scratched himself. He pinched himself. Still, he could not think of anything. "Ask us, ask us," said Gollum. Bilbo pinched himself and slapped himself. He gripped on his little sword. He even felt in his pocket with his other hand. There he found the ring he had picked up in the passage and forgotten about. "What have I got in my pocket?" he said aloud. He was talking to himself. But Gollum thought it was a riddle, and he was frightfully upset. "Not fair, not fair, is it? It isn't fair, my precious. Is it? Not fair, is it? To ask us what it's got in his nasty little pockets is?" Bilbo, seeing what had happened and having nothing better to ask, stuck to his question. "What have I got in my pocket?" he said louder. His father. "He must give us three guesses, is he, my precious? Three guesses, is?" "Very well, guess away," said Bilbo. "Antes," said Gollum. "Wrong," said Bilbo. But luckily he'd just taken his hand out again. "Guess again," said Gollum, more upset than ever. He thought of all the things he kept in his own pockets. Fishbone, goblin's teeth, wet shells, a bit of bat wing, sharp stone to sharpen his fangs on, and other nasty things. He tried to think what other people kept in their pockets. "Knife," he said at last. "Wrong," said Bilbo, who had lost his some time ago. "Last guess." Now Gollum was in a much worse state than when Bilbo had asked him the egg question. He hissed and spluttered and rocked himself backwards and forwards and slapped his feet on the floor and wriggled and squirmed, but still he did not dare to waste his last guess. "Come on," said Bilbo, "I'm waiting." He tried to sound bold and cheerful, but he did not feel at all sure how the game was going to end, whether Gollum guessed right or not. "Time's up," he said.
"String or nothing," shrieked Gollum,
which was not quite fair, working in two guesses at once. "Both wrong," cried Bilbo, very much relieved. He jumped at once to his feet, put his back to the nearest wall, and held out his little sword. He knew, of course, that the riddle game was sacred and of immense antiquity, and even wicked creatures were afraid to cheat when they played at it. But he felt he could not trust this slimy thing to keep any promise at a pinch. Any excuse would do for him to slide out of it. And after all, that last question had not been a genuine riddle according to the ancient laws. But at any rate, Gollum did not at once attack him. He could see the sword in Bilbo's hand. He sat still, shivering and whispering. At last Bilbo could wait no longer. "Well," he said, "what about your promise? I want to go. You must show me the way."
"Did we say so, precious? Show the nasty little Baggins the way out? Yes, yes. But what has it got in its pockets, eh? Not string, precious, but not nothing. Oh, no, Gollum."
"Never you mind," said Bilbo. A promise is a promise.
Of course it is. Impatient, precious.
Is Gollum.
But he must wait. Yes, it must. We can't go up the tunnel so hastily. We must go and get some things first, yes. Things to help us.
Well, hurry up, said Bruno. Relieved to think of Gollum going away. He thought he was just making an excuse and did not mean to come back. What was Gollum talking about? What useful thing could he keep out in the Dark Lake? But Bilbo was wrong. Gollum did mean to come back. He was angry now and hungry. And he was a miserable, wicked creature. And already had a plan. Not far away was his island, of which Bilbo knew nothing. And there, in his hiding place, he kept a few wretched oddments and one very beautiful thing. Very beautiful. Very wonderful. He had a ring. A golden ring, a precious ring. My birthday present, he whispered to himself, as he had often done in the endless dark days.
That's what he wants now, yes, he wants it.
He wanted it because it was a ring of power. And if you slipped that ring on your finger, you were invisible. Only in the full sunlight could you be seen, and then only by your shadow, and that would be shaky and faint.
My birthday present. It came to me on my birthday, my precious.
So he had always said to himself. But who knows how Gollum came by that present, ages ago in the old days when such rings were still at large in the world. Perhaps even the master who ruled them could not have said. Gollum used to wear it at first till it tired him. And then he kept it in a pouch next his skin till it galled him. And now usually he hid it in a hole in the rock on his island. And always going back to look at it. And still sometimes he put it on when he could not bear to be parted from it any longer, or when he was very, very hungry and tired of fish. Then he would creep along dark passages looking for stray goblins. He might even venture into places where the torches were lit and made his eyes blink and smart, for he would be safe. Oh yes, quite safe. No one would see him, no one would notice him, till he had his fingers on their throat. Only a few hours ago he had worn it and caught a small goblin imp. How it squeaked. He still had a bone or two left to gnaw, but he wanted something softer.
Quite safe, yes, he whispered to himself. It won't see us, will it, my precious? No, it won't see us, and its nasty little sword will be useless, yes, quite.
That is what was in his wicked little mind. As he slipped suddenly from Bilbo's side and flat back to his boat and went off into the dark. Bilbo thought he'd heard the last of him. Still, he waited a while, for he had no idea how to find his way out alone. Suddenly he heard a screech. It sent a shiver down his back. Gollum was cursing and wailing away in the gloom, not very far off by the sound of it. He was on his island, scrabbling here and there, searching and seeking in vain.
Where is it? Where is it?
Bilbo heard him crying.
Lost it is, my precious. Lost, lost. Curses and crashes, my precious, is lost.
What's the matter, Bilbo called? What have you lost?
In Mandaskus, shrieked Gollum. None of his business. No, Gollum. Gollum is lost. Gollum.
Well, so am I, cried Bilbo. And I want to get unlost. And I won the game, and you promised. So come along. Come and let me out and then go on with your looking. Utterly miserable as Gollum sounded, Bilbo could not find much pity in his heart, and he had a feeling that anything Gollum wanted so much could hardly be something good. Come along, he shouted.
No, not yet, precious,
Gollum answered.
We must search for it. It's lost, Gollum.
But you never guessed my last question, and you promised, said Bilbo.
Never guessed, said Gollum.
Then suddenly, out of the gloom came a sharp tss.
What has it got in its pockets, Sis? Tell us that.
It must tell first.
As far as Bilbo knew, there's no particular reason why he should not tell. Gollum's mind had jumped to a guess quicker than his. Naturally, for Gollum had brooded for ages on this one thing. He was always afraid of its being stolen. But Bilbo was annoyed at the delay. After all, he had won the game pretty fairly at a horrible risk. Answers were to be guessed, not given, he said.
But it wasn't a fair question, said Gollum. Not a riddle, Precious, no.
Oh, well, if it's a matter of ordinary questions, Bilbo said, then I asked one first. What have you lost? Tell me that.
What has it got in its pocket, sis?
The sound came hissing louder and sharper, and as he looked towards it, to his alarm, Bilbo now saw two small points of light peering at him. As suspicion grew in Gollum's mind, the light of his eyes burned like a pale flame. What have you lost? Bilbo persisted. But now the light in Gollum's eyes had become a green fire and was coming swiftly nearer. Gollum was in his boat again, paddling wildly back to the dark shore, and such a rage of loss and suspicion was in his heart that no sword had any more terror for him. Bilbo could not guess what had maddened the wretched creature, but he saw that all was up, and the Gollum meant to murder him at any rate. Just in time, he turned and ran blindly back up the passage down which he had come, keeping close to the wall and feeling it with his left hand.
What has it got in its pocket, sis?
He heard the hiss loud behind him, and a splash as Gollum leapt from his boat. What have I wonder, he said to himself, as he panted and stumbled along. He put his left hand in his pocket. The ring felt very cold as it quietly slipped onto his broken forefinger. The hiss was close behind him. He turned now and saw Gollum's eyes like small green lamps coming up the slope. Terrified, he tried to run faster. But suddenly he struck his toes on a snag in the floor and fell flat with his little sword under him. In a moment, Gollum was on him. But before Bilbo could do anything, recover his breath, pick himself up, or wave his sword, Gollum passed by, taking no notice of him, cursing and whispering as he ran. What could it mean? Gollum could see in the dark. Bilbo could see the light of his pale eyes, shining even from behind. Painfully he got up and sheathed his sword, which was now glowing faintly again. Then very cautiously he followed. There seemed nothing else to do. There's no good crawling back down to Gollum's water. Perhaps if he followed him, Gollum might lead him to some way of escape without meaning to.
Curse it, curse it, curse it, hissed Gollum. Curse the Baggins, it's gone. What is it got in?
One ring to rule them all, and one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and the darkness bind them. There's only two lines of a verse long known in Elven lore. Three rings for the Elven kings under the sky, seven for the dwarf lords in their halls of stone, nine for mortal men doomed to die, one for the Dark Lord on his dark throne in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, one ring to bring them all and in the darkness bind them in the land of Mordor where the shadows lie. The road goes ever on and on, down from the door where it began. Now far ahead the road is gone, and I must follow it, if I can, pursuing it with eager feet until it joins some larger way, where many paths and errands meet. And whither then, I cannot say. Upon the hearth the fire is red, beneath the roof it is a bed. But not yet weary are our feet, still round the corner we may meet a sudden tree or standing stone that none have seen but we alone. Tree and flower and leaf and grass, let them pass, let them pass. Hill and water under sky, pass them by, pass them by. Still round the corner there may wait a new road or a secret gate, and though we pass them by today, tomorrow we may come this way and take the hidden paths that run towards the moon or to the sun. Apple, thorn, and nut, and sloe, let them go, sand, and stone, and pool, and dell, fare you well, fare you well. Home is behind and world ahead, and there are many paths to tread through shadows to the edge of night, until the stars are all alight. Then world behind and home ahead, we'll wander back to home and bed. Mist and twilight, cloud and shade, away shall fade, away shall fade. Fire and lamp and meat and bread, and then to bed, and then to bed. Snow white, O lady clear, O queen beyond the western seas, O light to us that wander here amid the world of woven trees. Gilthaniel, O Elbereth, clear are thy eyes and bright thy breath. Snow white, we sing to thee, in a far land beyond the sea.
Those stars that in the sunless year with shining hand by her were sown, in windy fields now bright and clear we see your silver blossom blown. O Elbereth, Gilthamiel, we still remember, we who dwell in this far land beneath the trees, thy starlight on the western sea. The voice of Pippin was suddenly lifted up above the others in one of Bilbo's favorite bath songs. Sing hey of the bath at close of day that washes the weary mud away. Alone is he that will not sing. Oh, water hot is a noble thing. Oh, sweet is the sound of falling rain and the brook that leaps from hill to plain. But better than rain or rippling streams is water hot that smokes and steam. Oh, water cold we may pour at need down a thirsty throat to be glad indeed. But better is beer if drink we lack, and water hot poured down the back. Oh, water is fair that leaps on high in a fountain white beneath the sky. But never did fountain sound so sweet as splashing hot water with my feet. Farewell, we call to hearth and hall, the wind may blow and rain may fall. We must away at break of day, far over wood and mountain tall. To Rivendell, where elves yet dwell, in glades beneath the misty fell. Through moor and waste we ride in haste, and whither then we cannot tell. With foes ahead, behind us dread, beneath the sky shall be our bed. Until at last our toil be past, our journey done, our errand sped. We must away, we ride before the break of day. Hey, come, merry doll, derry doll, my darling. Light goes the weather wind and the feathered starling. Down along underhill, shining in the sunlight, waiting on the doorstep to the cold starlight. There, a pretty lady, river woman's daughter, slender as the willow wand, clearer than the water. Old Tom Bombadil, water lilies bringing, comes hopping home again. Can you hear him singing? Hey, come, merry doll, derry doll, and merry-o, goldberry, goldberry, mellow, yellowberry-o. Poor old willow man, you tuck your roots away. Tom's in a hurry now. Evening will follow day. Tom's going home again. Water lilies bringing. Hey, come, merry doll. Can you hear me singing? Hop along, my little friends, up the withy windle. Tom's going on ahead, candles for it to kindle. Down west sinks the sun. Soon you will be groping. When the night shadows fall, then the door will open. Out of the window panes, light will twinkle yellow. Fear no alder black, heed no hoary willow. Fear neither root nor bough, Tom goes on before you. Hey now, merry dog, we'll be waiting for you. There is an inn, a merry old inn, beneath an old grey hill, and there they brew a beer so brown that the man in the moon himself came down one night to drink his fill. The ostler has a tipsy cat that plays a five-string fiddle, and up and down he runs his bow, now squeaking high, now purring low, now sawing in the middle. The landlord keeps a little dog that's mighty fond of jokes. When there's good cheer among the guests, he cocks an ear at all the jests and laughs until he chokes. They also keep a horned cow as proud as any queen, but music turns her head like ale and makes her wave her tufted tail and dance upon the green. And oh, the rows of silver dishes and the store of silver spoons. For Sunday there's a special pair, and these they polish up with care on Saturday afternoon. The man in the moon was drinking deep, and the cat began to wail. A dish and a spoon and the table danced, the cow in the garden madly pranced, and the little dog chased his tail. The man in the moon took another mug, and then rolled beneath his chair, and there he dozed and dreamed of ale, till in the sky the stars were pale, and dawn was in the air. Then the ostler said to his tipsy cat, "The white horses of the moon, they neigh and chant their silver bits, for their master's been and drowned his wits, and the sun will be rising soon." So the cat in his fiddle played, "Hey, diddle, diddle, a jig that will wake the dead." He squeaked and sawed and quickened the tune while the landlord shook the man in the moon. "It's after three," he said. They rolled the man slowly up the hill and bundled him into the moon, while his horses galloped up in rear and the cow came capering like a deer and the dish ran up with a spoon. Now quicker the fiddle went, deedle-dum-diddle, the dog began to roar. The cow and the horses stood on their heads, the guests all bounded from their beds and danced on the floor. With a ping and a pong, the fiddle strings broke, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such fun, and the Saturday dish went off at a run with a silver Sunday spoon. The round moon rolled behind the hill as the sun raised up her head. She hardly believed her fiery eyes, for though it was day, to her surprise, they all went back to bed. Gil-galad was an elven king, of him the harpers sadly sing, the last whose realm was fair and free between the mountains and the sea.
His sword was long, his lance was keen, his shining helm afar was seen. The countless stars of heaven's field were mirrored in his silver shield. But long ago he rode away, and where he dwelleth none can say. For into darkness fell his star in Mordor where the shadows are.
I will tell you the tale of Tinuviel, said Strider, in brief, for it is a long tale of which the end is not known. And there are none now except Elrond that remember it aright as it was told of old. He was silent for some time, and then he began not to speak, but to chant softly. The leaves were long, the grass was green, the hemlock umbels tall and fair, and in the glade a light was seen of stars and shadow shimmering. Tinuviel was dancing there to music of a pipe unseen, and light of stars was in her hair and in her raiment glimmering. There Beren came from mountains cold, and lost he wandered under leaves, and where the elven river rolled, he walked alone and sorrowing. He peered between the hemlock leaves, and saw in wonder flowers of gold upon her mantle and her sleeves, and her hair like shadow following. Enchantment healed his weary feet that over hills were doomed to roam, and forth he hastened, strong and fleet, and grasped at moonbeams glistening. Through woven woods and elven home she lightly fled on dancing feet, and left him lonely still to roam in the silent forest, listening. He heard thereof the flying sound of feet as light as linden leaves, or music welling underground in hidden hollows quavering. Now withered lay the hemlock sheaves, and one by one with sighing sound, whispering fell the beechen leaves in the wintry woodland wavering. He sought her ever wandering far, where leaves of years were thickly strewn, by light of moon and ray of star in frosty heavens shivering. Her mantle glinted in the moon as on a hilltop high and far she danced, and at her feet was strewn a mist of silver quivering. When winter passed she came again, and her song released the sudden spring, like rising lark and falling rain and melting water bubbling. He saw the elven flowers spring about her feet and healed again. He longed by her to dance and sing on the grass and trundling. Again she fled, but swift he came, Tinuviel, Tinuviel, he called her by her elvish name, and there she halted, listening. One moment stood she, and a spell his voice laid on her. Beren came, and doom fell on Tinuviel, that in his arms lay glistening. As Beren looked into her eyes, within the shadow of her hair, the trembling starlight of the skies he saw there mirrored shimmering. Tinuviel, the elven fair, immortal maiden, elven wise, about him cast her shadowy hair, and arms like silver glimmering. Long was the way that fate them bore, o'er stony mountains cold and grey, through halls of iron and darkling door and woods of nightshade marvellous. The sundering seas between them lay, and yet at last they met once more. And long ago they passed away in the forest singing sorrowless.
Standing up with his hands behind his back as if he was at school, he began to sing to an old tune. A troll sat alone on his seat of stone, and munched and mumbled a bare old bone. For many a year he'd gnawed it near, for meat was hard to come by, some by, come by. In a cave in the hills he dwelt alone, and meat was hard to come by. Up came John with his big boots on, says he to the troll, pray what is yon? For it looks like the shin of an Uncle Jim, there should be a loin in graveyard, caveyard, paveyard. This many a year has Jim been gone, and I thought he were loin in graveyard. My lad said, troll, this bone I stole, but what be bones that lie in a hole? Thine uncle was dead as a lump of lead, afore I found his carcass. Harky, marky, he can spare a bone for a poor old troll, he's got no use for his carcass. Said John, I don't see where the likes of thee, with an axe and leaves should go making free, with a leg of the shin of my father's skin, so hand the old bone over, rover, trover, though dead he be, belongs to he, so hand the old bone over. For a couple of pence, as a trolling grins, I'll eat thee too and gnaw thy shins. A bit of fresh meat will go down sweet. Thee'll be a nice change from thine uncle, sunkle, gruntle. I'm tired of gnawing old bones and skins. Thee'll be a nice change from thine uncle. But just as he thought his dinner was caught, he found his hands had hold of naught. Before he could mind, John slipped behind and gave him the boot to land him. Warn him, darn him, a bump of the boot in the seat, John thought, would be the way to learn him. But harder than stone is the flesh and bone of a troll that sits in the hills alone. As well set your boot to the mountain's root, for the seat of a troll don't feel it, deal it, peel it. Old troll laughed, but John did groan, for his poor toes did feel it. John's leg is game since home he came, and his bootless foot is lasting lame. But troll don't care, and he is still there, with a bony bone from its owner. Donor, boner, troll's old seat is still the same, with a bony bone from its owner.
They got up and withdrew quietly into the shadows and made for the door. Sam, they left behind, fast asleep still with a smile on his face. In spite of his delight in Bilbo's company, Frodo felt a tug of regret as they passed out of the Hall of Fire. And even as they stepped over the threshold, a single, clear, elvish voice rose in song. Ar Elbereth Gilthaniel, Silevrin Penamiriel, O Menel Aglar Elena, Nachaered Palandiriel Agalath Remmin Enora, Fanuilos Lelinavon Nevaia, Si Nevairon. The world was young, the mountains green, no stain yet on the moon was seen. No words were laid on stream or stone when Durin woke and walked alone. He named the nameless hills and dells, he drank from yet untasted wells. He stooped and looked in mirror mirror and saw a crowd of stars appear as gems of a silver thread above the shadow of his head. The world was fair, the mountains tall, in elder days before the fall of mighty kings in Nargothrond and Gondolin, who now beyond the western seas have passed away. The world was fair in Durin's day. A king he was on carven throne in many pillared halls of stone, with golden roof and silver floor and runes of power upon the door. Light of sun and star and moon in shining lamps of crystal hewn, undimmed by cloud or shade of night, there shone forever fair and bright. Their hammer on the anvil smote, their chisel clove and graver wrote. Their forge was blade and bound was hilt, their delver mine the mason built. Their beryl pearl and opal pale and metal wrought like fish's mail. Buckler and corslet, axe and sword and shining spears were laid in horn. Unwearied then were Durin's folk, beneath the mountains music woke, and harpers harped and minstrels sang, and at the gates the trumpets rang. The world is grey, the mountains old, the forge's fire is ashen cold, no harp is rung, no hammer falls, the darkness dwells in Durin's halls. The shadow lies upon his tomb in Moria in Khazad Dûm, but still the sunken stars appear in dark and windless mirror mirror. There lies his crown in water deep till Durin wakes again from sleep. An elfin maid was of old, a shining star by day. Her mantle white was hemmed with gold, her shoes of silver grey. A star was bound upon her brows, a light was on her hair, a sun upon the golden boughs in Lorien the fair. Her hair was long, her limbs were white, and fair she was and free, and in the wind she went as light as leaf of linden tree. Beside the falls of Nimrodel, by water clear and cool, her voice as falling silver fell into the shining pool. Where now she wanders none can tell, in sunlight or in shade, for lost of yore was Nimrodel and in the mountains strayed. The elven ship in haven grey beneath the mountain lee awaited her for many a day beside the roaring sea. The wind by night in northern lands arose and loud it cried, and drove the ship from elven strands across the streaming tide. When dawn came dim, the land was lost, the mountains sinking grey, beyond the heaving waves that tossed their plumes of blinding spray. Amroth beheld the fading shore, now low beyond the swell, and cursed the faithless ship that bore him far from Nimrodel. Of old he was an elven king, the lord of tree and glen, when golden were the boughs in spring in fair Lorien. From helm to sea they saw him leap as arrow from the string, and dive into the water deep as mew upon the wing. The wind was in his flowing hair, the foam about him shone. Afar they saw him strong and fair go riding like a swan. But from the west has come no word, and on the hither shore no tidings elven folk have heard of Amroth evermore. When evening in the shire was grey, his footsteps on the hill were heard. Before the dawn he went away on journey long without a word. From Wilderland to western shore, from northern waste to southern hill, through dragon lair and hidden door and darkening woods he walked at will. With dwarf and hobbit, elves and men, with mortal and immortal folk, with bird on bough and beast in den, in their own secret tongues he spoke. A deadly sword, a healing hand, a back that bent beneath his load, a trumpet voice, a burning brand, a weary pilgrim on the road. A lord of wisdom throned he sat, swift in anger, quick to laugh, an old man in a battered hat who leaned upon a thorny staff. He stood upon the bridge alone, and fire and shadow both defied. His staff was broken on the stone, in Khazad-dûm his wisdom died.